I think the funnest thing about this show is that the gas station pimp sex ring was real.
Yeah, I was reading about that too. That's awesome.
Just such, and I really dearly, genuinely hope that they dress the same as well, because everybody looks spectacular. But I think my favourite person involved with the whole, the best look from that whole gas station sex ring has got to be Dylan McDermott with his jaunty little hat and his swagger, it's just beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
Hey, for a really, really attractive man, Dylan McDermott does that kind of slightly sleazy thing. Slightly sleazy, but still likeable. Like, he does that really, really well. He's got a sort of knack for that kind of thing, I think.
Yeah, he is really good at that. And Ernie West is a particularly great character for straddling that lovable rogue kind of line. Like,
totally.
He could go either way. And it really could have gone either way. He could have been a total creep. And then, a different take on that exact same story would have made him a horrible, controlling creep.
Apparently, the real life character on which he's based was actually a lovely guy, like beloved of Hollywood and very discreet. I think eventually, did he write a memoir or like someone wrote his biography? But
I feel
he
like that's a. Yeah.
But not until most of his client base had died, because he was like, I don't want to talk about people. Like, I'm not in this for the. For the debauchery or whatever. I'm not trying to like make a name for myself as the pimp who knows Hollywood secrets. Just like, this is what I do. You know, these are my clients and like my friends or whatever.
Well, if he didn't write that, I wish it existed, because I would read the hell out of it.
This is Off Script, a podcast about the things we love, by me, Kylie Klein Nixon, and entertainment reporter Emily Brooks.
So it sounds like a kinder, more fun version of Hollywood Babylon, which Kenneth Anger wrote, I think, in the late 60s or the 70s, about this period, like basically after, or maybe slightly earlier than this period that Hollywood deals with, basically gathering together all the rumours that he grew up with as a Hollywood brat himself. That's where we get that story about Fatty Arbuckle killing a girl. There's a really fantastic podcast called You Must Remember This. She did an entire season called Hollywood Babylon, like fact-checking Hollywood Babylon. It's fantastic. If you've never listened to it, it's absolutely
You've told
brilliant.
Me so many times to listen to this podcast. And
it's
like,
just the best podcast about Hollywood that isn't ours.
I really need to start listening to it.
It really is. And it's by a woman called Corina Longworth, who also happens to be Ryan Johnson's wife. Johnson is a very lucky man. Yes. Yes.
I didn't know that. Oh,
no, I don't.
So cool.
I didn't until very recently. But yeah, she was on his arm on the red carpet at the Oscars.
At the Oscars.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
Right.
So what an awesome couple.
Yeah, that's great. And I really will start listening to that podcast. What I need to do in order to listen to all the podcasts that I want to listen to is just cease to engage with anyone and just listen to podcasts all the time.
Listen to podcasts. Start going on really long walks.
Permanently plugged in.
So today, we're talking about Ryan Murphy's Hollywood, which is currently on Netflix.
Yeah.
And I've watched the whole thing, and Emily, you've watched most of it, eh?
I've watched 4 out of 7.
I'm worried I'm going to spoil it for you I don't know if I am going to spoil it for you, because I think that's something we should talk about.
Whether or not we're going to spoil.
Well, that's one of the main problems, I thought, with the show, is that because of what Ryan Murphy's trying to do with it, it undercuts a lot of the tension and it pushes it into fan fiction territory.
I'm probably not going to finish watching this show.
You didn't enjoy it.
Well, this is the thing with Ryan Murphy. I think almost all of his TV projects I have watched in part and kind of started out excited about and then drifted away from. I think there's a lot. I was going to say style over substance, but that might not be totally fair. It's not that there's no substance. It's just that I find him really obvious. And just that often the points that he's making are interesting and legitimate, but I just find them really overworked the way that he does it.
Yeah.
So it's very unsubtle.
Yeah. There's no subtlety at all in this.
And what I like, I mean, look, I love things that are camp. I love campness. It really appeals to me. And so I guess that's why on the surface Ryan Murphy always appeals to me. I mean, I remember I really enjoyed like the first probably couple of seasons of Popular. I've watched probably two or three seasons of Nip Tuck, maybe about the same amount of Glee. You know, like at the beginning, I'm all in for the camp and the melodrama and the soapiness.
Mm.
But after a while, I just get a bit bored of what Ryan Murphy does, I think. After a while, I get bored of the same points just being hammered at me from kind of different angles and perspectives. And yeah, that's how I felt in this show. Like this show was a sort of miniature form of, you know, a few seasons of one of those earlier network shows. The first couple of episodes I was all in, and by the end of the fourth episode I was like, I'm just a bit bored of it.
Yeah, and I think the reason for that is that he's... I've really tried hard to tease this out so I can explain it without this being the most tedious episode ever. Stories always need conflict, right? Scenes need to turn in the middle. They need for the characters to be pushing against something in order to keep you engrossed, or there needs to be some kind of mystery, some kind of difficulty for them to overcome. And the problem with Hollywood was that all of those roadblocks, we know, racism, sexism, ageism, all the isms, we know what they are, and we know that people very rarely overcome them. And when they do, it's a real struggle. Whereas in the Hollywood universe that Ryan Murphy's created, those roadblocks just get run over by everybody working together.
All you need is someone to be brave and take a stand, and for Eleanor Roosevelt to come and talk to you.
I love the Eleanor Roosevelt thing.
But I loved it. There's something almost like offensive about that, isn't there?
Absolutely.
You two could have broken through if only you had had a bit more gumption.
Yeah, or just spoken to the right person at the right time, or said the right thing in the right way.
Which is sort of interesting coming from an openly gay... I mean, I know it's different being on the creative side than being on the, you know, in front of the camera. But, like, it's still interesting that who presumably has faced his fair share of discrimination and bigotry can be so tone-deaf about that.
But I think what he's trying to do is the same kind of thing. It is tone-deaf. It comes across as tone-deaf completely. It's awkward, and I cringed a lot while I was watching the show, even as I was enjoying it. But I think what he was trying to do is a kind of more light-hearted, cozy version of, say, what Quentin Tarantino did with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and what he did with Inglourious Basterds, where he just goes, "Now, I didn't like that version. I don't like that version of history. I'm just going to do it my way. And my way, you know, I'm just going to have a couple of guys blow Hitler's head up. I'm just going to, you know, I'm just going to have Sharon Tate surviving." And
I feel like a big difference between Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and Inglourious Basterds, considering when it was made, is that all of the issues that he's pointing out in the series are still alive and well right now. I mean, you're writing this like fucking 4 years after Oscar's So White, you know? We're still, I mean, Me Too is still a relevant hashtag.
It's come out in the same year where there were
no female directors nominated.
No female directors, that's right.
Director, yeah. Like one black woman nominated for Best Actress. Were there any other?
Yeah.
I'm not even sure. But, you know, all of these issues, discrimination based on race, discrimination based on sexuality, like how many openly gay actors are there getting leading roles in Hollywood today?
Very few, a handful.
And how many also?
To be fair,
though,
most of them are pretty high B or A minus list.
I would say so too.
But still,
like, it's one of those things where you can always come out with the notable exceptions, but really, few of your leading men and women in like big budget blockbuster films are openly gay, and a lot of the ones that are also playing either gay or either gay characters or characters whose sexuality isn't like an aspect, who are essentially asexual characters within the context of the film, right?
Mm, yeah.
Like, that's still there. Even, and like we were just saying about the Best Director category at the Oscars, discrimination against just gender is still there, you know? And
yeah.
We do live in an age of the notable exception, for sure, which puts us slightly ahead of the 1950s, I guess. But there's still exceptions. The very long-winded point that I'm trying to make is, if Ryan Murphy wanted to talk about this stuff, would it have been more interesting and done more of a service to the subject matter if he had just said it now, if he had just made it contemporary?
I think it would have been. I think it would have been way better. It would have looked a lot less cool.
Which is, of course, you know, a good 50% problem, of what Ryan Murphy's always doing. Should we take a quick pause and say what the show is actually about?
Sure.
Now that we've ripped its themes to shreds.
Without giving away too much. So the show's called Hollywood.
It's about an aspiring group of actors and, to a lesser degree, screenwriters, directors, creative people, trying to make it in an immediately post-war Hollywood. So I don't think we actually get a date, but it's, you know, late 1940s. Yeah.
There are a lot of victory roles, so
there
I'm thinking.
There are a lot of victory roles, yes.
Fantastic victory roles.
And essentially, so it's about these people, they're all young, they're all like in their, I don't know, early 20s, trying to make it in Hollywood, and they're all coming up against different stumbling blocks. So there's the actress who's clearly the best actress in the studio but also black. There's the screenwriter who's written a great script but is also black and he's gay. Then you have
the director writer who's passing as white but is actually Asian,
right? And here's a weird thing that the show does. You have a few real characters. So we started out talking about Dylan McDermott's character, who's based on a real pimp. There's a story in which several of the male characters work for this pimp who owns a gas station as a front, and people come through and ask to be taken to Dreamland, which
means a very, very attractive young man will jump in the car with them and go off to some hotel somewhere.
Right. So there's a few characters. Rock Hudson is a real character, which I just find really strange.
Yeah.
Like, they just randomly throw in these real historical figures. But in any event, that's essentially what the show is about. And it's sort of hinged around the screenplay that this black screenwriter has written, which is a movie I'd really love to see, about a woman called Peg, is it Entwistle? I want to say is her last name.
Peggy Entwistle,
and this really happened, committed suicide in the 20s by jumping off the Hollywood sign.
Her story is actually in Hollywood Babylon, she was talking about.
It's also touched on in one of the seasons of American Horror Story that I've seen. I think the second season.
Right.
Yeah, it's obviously something that
Okay.
Yeah.
You're in either a Peg Entwistle Hollywood conspiracy theory fan or you're a Black Dahlia Hollywood conspiracy theory fan.
That's also in that season of American Horror Story.
Those are the two big kind of tragic Hollywood chews you up and spits you out stories.
Yeah, so that's what it's about. It's about this team of people trying to get this movie made, and all of them, as we were saying earlier, coming up against the Hollywood machine that is racist and sexist and homophobic, and getting past those barriers through sheer force of will or something. Yeah.
I mean, there are lots of characters that are based on real people, and I read an interview with Ryan Murphy talking about why those three are real, and they are
Rock Hudson,
Anna May Wong,
oh, yeah,
and Queen Latifah plays Hattie McDaniel, who is the first African-American woman to win an Oscar. She won Best Supporting Actress for her role in
Gone with the Wind.
With the Wind. So, and he said that each one of those people had an absolutely crappy time in Hollywood. Hattie McDaniel, she wasn't allowed in to collect her Oscar on the night. She either had to have another day or some weird thing happened. It was like she wasn't allowed in there because she was African American. And Anna May Wong, who had a big career during the silent films prior to the Hays Code, had a huge career in silent films playing pretty much sort of exotic femme fatale or, you know, mysterious women of the East. nice kind of thing. But when the talkies came in and the Hays Code came in, that was it. She was done. There was no more roles for her. And also, obviously, Rock Hudson was never able to be out while he was... Was he out at all while he was alive?
I feel like
he might have been towards the end of his life,
when he was probably already really sick. But it was like an open secret, I think.
Open secret. Everybody in Hollywood. And actually, if you go back and watch a couple of those old Doris Day movies, they do joke about it a little bit.
Do they?
There's a couple of like... Yeah, that you would only catch, you know, knowing with hindsight, you look back and go, wow, that's a bit on the nose. But anyway, which I guess was just basically maybe the filmmaker's way and his way of kind of connecting with that part of the audience secretly or something, or, you know, without the straights freaking out. But yeah, so where did we get to
with
that?
You were saying why Ryan Murphy brought in these three real characters.
So Ryan Murphy said he wanted to give them the ending in Hollywood, the finales that they deserved. And that's why it kind of brings me back again to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which is Quentin Tarantino wanting Sharon Tate to have the ending she deserved. I don't know if he was inspired by that or if it's just, you know, an idea that's time has come. Let's liberate all these people who had a shitty time in Hollywood.
Maybe.
I don't know. But again, like, I agree with you that it doesn't work because none of those issues have been rectified. We still struggle with all of these things. And so it comes across as like this weird wish fulfillment, fan fiction kind of rewrite that's only going to appeal to people who already think that the world should have been that way anyway. It's not going to change anybody's mind.
I'm not even sure about that because I think that the world should have been that way anyway. But and because of that,
and
when
it didn't
I watched
appeal to
the
you.
Show,
yeah, yeah.
I like I said, just found it sort of slightly offensive. Like, but the world, like, this so clearly didn't happen. And it's so clearly not that easy. Like, that's I think, is what's really offensive about it, is that if it was really that easy, then we wouldn't still have these problems. You know? If it was really that all you needed to do was just give the studio head the right kind of impassioned plea, and then you could, you know,
And put a woman in charge.
Yeah,
put a woman in charge. And give it... Yeah.
If it was... Yeah, I just feel like there have been people who've fought against this, you know, for 100 years, and those people have fought a strong and hard and good fight. It's just not as easy as he's making it look in the show. And if it was, then we wouldn't be watching it in, you know, in a time when the world is still full of... Well, we wouldn't be watching
What's in the news today? Yeah, what's in the news today? An entertainment, someone senior in the New Zealand entertainment scene is being done for sexually harassing two women who say they now... Their careers are over. And that's here in New Zealand, you know. So, you know, this is absolute nonsense.
Yeah. So that's fundamentally, I think, what I dislike about this show.
Oh, and I agree with you. I totally know what you mean. And it actually gets worse later. I don't know. Should we spoil a little bit? Or do you want to be spoiled
a little
bit?
Like I said, I don't think I'm going to.
The worst. This is one of the worst things that happens for me is later. So how this woman takes over Ace Studios, where it's set, is the wife. She is the wife, marvellously played by...
Patti LuPone.
She's Avis Amberg, and she's married to Ace Amberg, the head of Ace Studios, where all of this is sort of centered around. And Ace ends up in hospital, and she takes over the studio. And under her leadership, they get to make their movie. So this all goes rockingly along, and they have a few roadblocks, but they overcome them very easily. And then Ace, who's been in a coma, wakes up. And that's the cliffhanger ending of one episode. And then the next episode, and I was actually like, oh, here we go. It's all going to, everything that they've worked so hard for is all going to go down the toilet now. Except it doesn't. It doesn't, because Ace has been changed radically from the horrible, philandering, sexist, racist pig that he was before he had his heart attack, when he was basically pressuring Myra Sorvino's Jeanne Crandall into having a long-term relationship with him under his wife's nose. Yeah, he wakes up from that, wants to try again with his beautiful wife, wants to try with this movie and see if it could go. And it's just like, well, the one thing that could have been in the end, you know, it could have actually had a purpose, could have had a point, could have been like, you know, just that little bit of reality, and still said, you know, that there are huge roadblocks to these issues still. No, they just had they made that all
so
nice and cozy
Ryan
and lovely
Murphy.
Too. It was, I think he just, he got caught up in the idea that he, you know, that maybe if we keep telling these stories about roadblocks all the time, and we keep telling these stories about how it's hard and about how people suffer and about how things never get done, so that's what keeps happening. And he thinks, maybe I'll tell a story where everything goes great and that'll start happening.
Right.
But if nobody's going to watch it, because it's like...
But again...
The final episode where they go to the Oscars is possibly the most cringe 14-year-old wish fulfillment story. It's super cringe because it's so bad.
Ryan Murphy is great at the 14-year-old wish fulfillment, you know? Like, he really is.
Yeah, but for sure.
That's, again, why I think this would be... If you wanted to do that, if you wanted to tell the Hollywood wish fulfillment story, the overcoming all of those barriers that we've banged on about already, make it contemporary. Because what he's done is essentially said that if only like 70 years ago you guys had just made the right speech to the right person, then we wouldn't have these
problems.
If this
had been contemporary,
I don't think he meant to do that at all, but that's the read that I get of the show, you know.
He so easily could have made this contemporary too.
Yeah.
So easily, because one of the storylines, and I think it's probably like this, there is a whole lot of storylines in this show. There are storylines left, right, and center. And one of the strongest is about an African-American, he's a gay African-American writer, and he's so desperate not to be pigeonholed as the guy who writes for African-Americans that he writes the Peggy Entwistle story. He writes a film about her because he wants to be known as someone who can write any kind of story. And during the course of his relationship with, when the story gets picked up, and during the course of his relationship with Darren Criss's Raymond Ainsley, the director, they change the story to be about an African-American girl who comes to Hollywood, gets chewed up by the system, and then kills herself, which we'll get into, you know, I mean, I can't go into too much detail because it will totally spoil the whole series. But there, you could still tell that story today, because there are,
absolutely,
I'm sure there are writers who come up against that kind of thing all the time. They don't want to be the, they don't want to just have to write the feminist starring all women. They don't have to want to write the, you know, the kitchen sink drama just because they're female.
Right, and we still, and it's a problem that we still have today. I mean, I remember listening to an episode of the Vanity Fair Little Gold Men podcast, which is a podcast I really enjoy. It's a little bit like industry, but if you like that, then it's a really fun podcast to listen to. But anyway, I remember when they were talking about possible nominees for the Oscars, one thing that they said was that apparently the screener for Little Women had been watched far fewer times than most of the other big contender screeners, because men were like,
why am I not surprised?
This
why
is don't watch me. It? It's got women in the title. It's written and directed by a woman.
Oh, how are we ever going to get... Oh, that is so depressing to me. Because it's like... Oh, because that says two things. First of all, there are, you know, that women's stories are just never as important to anybody, even to other women. And secondly, that fucking those are the people making the choices about what gets made, and that's why, because they...
So it's just a self-fulfilling prophecy. Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck, that makes me so angry.
Let's talk about things that are good about the show, because I think there are some really good things about it. Number one, I would say, is the casting.
Dylan McDermott.
Also Darren Criss.
So great.
So good.
Yeah, he's
so
great.
So good with Ryan Murphy's material all the time, I think.
He does heaps with a character that is not that well drawn out, I don't think. I mean, there's not that... Oh, I don't know. He does a lot with a character that's not incredibly deep.
Darren Criss is good at taking Ryan Murphy's very deliberately, you know, camp, soapy, melodramatic scripts and the characters within them and really making them, really like giving them a lot of humanity. So like, not that his characters aren't, you know, camp or soapy, but I just think he's good at like bringing a realism to that, which I really appreciate.
Yeah. I also really, really liked David Corenswet. I don't know how you say that last
name. Yeah, now I had never heard of him before.
Who played Jack Costello, apparently that's his first thing, which is astounding to me.
Yeah, he's great.
He must have done other stuff in the US that I haven't seen. But he's fantastic. He plays the World War II vet who comes back wanting to be a big star. And he's adorable. He manages to be, like, super straight without that being obnoxious.
Yeah, he's got quite a good...
Which is
he's
like...
Got, so he definitely
He could
has,
be a good Superman, man. He is...
Right?
A, he's got a very... He's got a very, very... He's got that very chiseled jaw.
Henry Cavill.
It's very Cavill look to him. That is a bloody
good call. That is a really good call.
As I was watching it, thinking, should he be a good Superman? Why do I think that? Oh, because he looks like Henry Cavill.
Because he's mini Henry Cavill.
Because he looks like that guy who already was Superman once. Yeah.
He's good. I like how in this role, like, that character has the kind of gee whiz country boy naivety to him, but his aspirations don't feel ridiculous, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's because I don't think that was that uncommon, isn't there? I even feel like there was a big Hollywood star who had this similar trajectory in the 50s who came back from the war and was like,
oh, I'm sure.
I'm going to go be a star. Yeah. Oh, then I'm sure there would have been. I can't think who. But...
The other person who I really like in this, for newcomers or newcomers for me anyway, I like the guy who plays the screenwriter Archie Coleman a lot, Jeremy Pope.
Yeah, he was good.
I think he's very good.
He was really good. Yeah, he was really, really good. I've got to say, the guy who, Jake Picking, who played Rock Hudson, I did not
Me neither. I think they cast him largely because he does bear a pretty decent physical resemblance to Rock Hudson.
So funny you should say that, because I kept going and looking at pictures of Rock Hudson. Because when it came out that he was Rock Hudson, because Rock Hudson's real name was Roy Shearer. So when he was going on Roy Fitzgerald, I didn't really know who he was until he said, I'm going to call you Rock Hudson. And I was like, really? And I had to have a look at him and I was like, yeah, no, I'm not seeing it.
Oh, I see it.
I didn't get it at all. The chin, definitely the chin.
Yeah, and I didn't like that performance much either.
We've got to talk about Jim Parsons.
I was just
going to
say I didn't really like Jim Parsons either. I feel like Jim Parsons is so much is so better wooden. Than that. I think Jim Parsons, I feel like he should be, I mean, like, isn't he a bit embarrassed to be doing that? I don't know.
What do you mean? Because the character was so fucking horrible?
No, not because the character's so fucking horrible, but because Ryan Murphy seems to want to put every single negative stereotype of a gay man into that character. And Jim Parsons, who is, you know, like, one of the few openly gay actors, well, I mean, he had a long-running lead TV role. I guess he hasn't done a hell of a lot since How I Met Your Mother, since The Big Bang Theory, rather. But I just, like, you know, the bit where he's like, if you're going to be my client, first I'm going to have to suck your dick, and then, like, come to my house and I'm going to, like, dance around wearing fucking, like...
the fucking veil dance. What the hell? That did look like he was enjoying himself a great deal.
For sure. I'm sure that kind of thing is fun to do, but I just feel like... Yeah, I didn't like the way that character was drawn. Again, I found it kind of offensive, and I was just like, Jim Parsons, I feel like by doing this you are not doing... you are not doing quote-unquote gay Hollywood a great cause.
You need to watch the final episode because I hate to say this, but because I don't know if you... I don't want to make you watch this, but you might when I tell you this. So basically they try to redeem that character.
Oh, do they? All right. Well, that's good. That makes me feel
But no. I think the key word there is try. And... they do it in this really awkward way, which seems to be setting up the second season.
Okay.
Which I'm like, oh, what? Yeah, so we'll see how that goes.
Someone I'd lie down in traffic for is Holland Taylor, and she's awesome in this. I love her.
Oh, my God.
I love her.
I love her so much. So I just got through watching Mr. Mercedes on Amazon.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
And she is in there, and she is so wonderful. So good. She is so wonderful in every single episode that she's in. She's great. I love
and
her.
And I think she's awesome in this. So she's playing one of the studio execs at Ace Studios who is kind of championing...
She sort of mentors the starlets, the up-and-comings, right?
Yeah, and she's kind of known for being able to pick a star. Like, she can just tell who has the X Factor. You know, she's less concerned about talent or whatever than she is about just, like, that charisma.
The va-va-voom.
She's very good. She just looks like she's having so much fun.
Did you see the episode... There's another character called Dick Samuels who's the studio exec who's kind of... Ace is number two, right? So did you see the episode where he goes to a party?
I did, yeah.
So you saw the party episode. Yeah. I can't remember who the director, but apparently those parties were a thing as well, a real thing. where they'd start out as a
dinner
party, and then the women would leave and it would devolve into a big gay orgy. And so you saw that episode with him. I thought his story arc in that show was really
beautiful. Yeah, I thought that was really nicely done and really nuanced. Yeah.
It explored this idea that you know, gay men had to make massive sacrifices if they wanted to have a public life. Massive, massive, massive sacrifices. And that it was deeply painful and distressing. But some men did it. I just thought it was really beautiful.
Yeah, I really liked that too.
End up in a relationship at the end, and I would have liked...
With a man.
That to have, yeah, with a man. And I would have liked that to have been actually part of the... Rather than just a... And then he was okay because he found someone. In a bar. Don't worry about it. We're not going to actually have a gay love story. We've already got one, so we can't have room for another one.
So that guy, that actor, Joe Mantello, he's a stage actor, and just he's also openly gay. It's probably a lot easier on stage than it is in on screen. But he was actually one of the original cast members of the original Broadway run of Angels in America, just as a little bit of gay theatre trivia for you.
He's wonderful.
He's great. I think that's a really, having not seen the whole series, that's a much more sensitive portrayal of a gay man in Hollywood, in the late 40s.
In the bad days. And we can't not mention Samara Weaving.
No.
Her character starts out very cliche, white girl, mean girl, selfish, rich little bitch. But then it gets the Ryan Murphy treatment and turns into an absolute angel by the end of it. You're just kind of like, with no comeuppance. She at no point gets her comeuppance or learns a lesson or whatever. She just suddenly one day goes, I think I'll be the Ryan Murphy way now.
That's such a good way of putting
it. But she's so good. I love Samara Weaving so much. I love her so much.
The only other thing I've seen her in is Guns Akimbo, where she is equally delightful in a very, 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 very different role. But yeah, she's really good.
So you didn't see her in Ready or Not?
No. Oh, that's the horror movie.
That film is so fucking good.
Wait, I definitely haven't seen it, but I feel like I might have seen the trailers for it. There's another one with the bride. It is that one.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't realise it was her. I've seen the trailers, I haven't seen the movie.
Just sensational. And it came out last year, but I saw it this year, so I'm kind of counting it. It's in the running for my film of the year so far.
Amazing. Oh, it's going to be so weird this year.
Not that we've seen very many films this year.
Thanks
for nothing.
Podcast.
Lockdown.
That's a whole different podcast.
Yeah,
a
different podcast.
So where for you does this fall within a rough sort of Ryan Murphy meter? Like, where would you put this? Within the Ryan Murphy canon.
I feel like American Horror Story is probably the one I would go to watch more
often. The first season of that show, like, I love horror. I love sort of contained fear. I really, really enjoy it. And American Horror Story is right up my alley, and I did really love it. But holy shit, that thing is fucking scary. Like, I think much scarier than I expected it to be. Yeah.
The first season is really, really intense.
Yeah. Oh, Dylan McDermott's so good on that one. He's so good on that. Dylan McDermott and Connie Britton should be married in real life.
So
I
there's
love
some
them so
things
much.
That American Horror Story does that I think are just incredible. And that is not giving a shit about the story, like new story every season.
Yeah, that's cool.
I think
the
they have all kind of come back together in the end. Anthology seasons, using the same actors though, so you're kind of like, what's going on? Is this supposed to be linked in some way? Is this like alternate universes? And also, one time it killed Adam Levine. I think that makes me a bad person, doesn't it?
No, that's fine.
No, but my favourite season of American Horror Story was Coven.
I haven't seen it.
And I think for that, it's always going to be my...
I should go back and watch more American Horror Story.
My fave. I didn't really care for Glee at all.
Yeah, I found Glee very lightly entertaining. I mean, Glee was the kind of thing that I would, like, watch in the background, you know. I think Glee's probably something that I just felt really comfortable with because I was such a musical theatre geek when I was at school. That I was like... that it's sort of wish fulfillment for me, maybe. Like, imagine if you could be a musical theatre geek and also be as beautiful and popular as these people. Oh. Imagine if you were Lea Michele. I found it light.
Do you know what I really loved? Fuse.
I haven't seen Feud.
I'll tell you, Feud, the first maybe 8 episodes, I thought were just absolutely
so good.
Fantastic cast, fantastic story. And then it sort of like, I felt like it went on too long. And then when I found out it was a series, like there were going to be more, I thought it was a limited series, but it's apparently not. There will be other seasons. And then I was like, yeah, I don't think I could keep coming.
Yeah, it's the Ryan Murphy. That's just Ryan Murphy for me. I think American Horror Story would have seen it, but I would probably also put it at the top. I really quite like American Crime Story as well, especially The Murder of Gianni Versace, which is also Darren Criss.
Right. Didn't he win a, he won a Golden Globe for that, I think.
He's really good.
Or maybe it was an Emmy.
I'll look it up.
Yeah.
He, like, it's you know, when the campness of the subject matter matches the campness of just Ryan Murphy's whole kind of essence, there, like, some really special magic can happen. And I think probably that happens in an American Horror Story, and it also happens in particularly that second season of American Crime Story. You know, that's I think that's when he's at his best. But I would put this, like, this is low for me. I'm putting this, like,
I know, because the thing is, one of the things that bumps me out the most is that it's that show's got the best titles. I know it's weird to talk about titles, but I watched every episode's titles from beginning to end.
They because are they're really so beautiful. Good. They're and so they're, good.
They're almost like, if that was a modern, like you were saying, if that was set today, that show was set today with the exact same titles, I think it possibly could be like the best show ever. It's such a bummer. I feel like it's this lost opportunity.
Because
it's
Hollywood, I love, like, remade as a
petition. Ryan Murphy, petition. Remake Hollywood, set it today. Keep roughly the same story. Yeah. I guess the Hollywood system, there's no
studio system
anymore, so that wouldn't quite work. But it wouldn't take much to finagle the storyline.
No,
to,
I don't think so.
To suit there.
I don't think so.
I love shows. I love movies and TV shows about Hollywood. I think we've talked about that before.
Me too.
I'm a big fan of them.
There's nothing like I love the, you know, more exactly than the behind the scenes stuff. This show should, like, in theory, be right up my alley, but partly because of the inherent issues with it that we've talked about, and I think also just partly because of something about the way that Ryan Murphy tells stories, it ultimately left me cold. Yeah, Darren Criss won an Emmy.
So what
for The Assassination of Gianni Versace?
I thought he won. I knew he won something. Wrap it all up by that with this one. In terms of shows or movies about Hollywood on Hollywood, where would you fit it in? Because I feel like it sort of deserves a place, and maybe you can understand it a little better in the context of those other movies. You could watch that and then go and watch Hail Caesar.
I hadn't thought about those two actually, but
Really? Because that was the first thing I thought when I was watching. I was like, Hail Caesar had a vibe, had a feel of that film, which is like one of my
Hail Caesar's maybe set slightly later, right?
Later, it is. It's later,
but, they do have a similar. Yeah. So we're talking about Hail Caesar, the Coen Brothers film that came out 4 or 5 years ago. Yeah, I mean, Hail Caesar's very different because it's really not taking itself particularly seriously at all.
I know, I feel like Hollywood could have benefited from a little bit of that as well.
Yeah, it could have. Yeah, no, it probably could have. But yeah, pretty similar. Well, I definitely, prefer Hail Caesar to Hollywood.
Just for Channing Tatum's homoerotic sailor dance scene.
This is something to talk about when when the next Coen Brothers film comes out, but I think that's an underrated Coen.
Yeah, it didn't do very well.
I don't think it got the acclaim that it should have when it came out.
So I've got a Hail Caesar story I could tell just before.
I love it when you just drop this on me. Like, let me tell you about the time that I wound up being a featured extra in a scene with George Clooney.
No, I think that I would introduce myself to people as I was a featured extra in a scene with George Clooney once. Hello, my name is Carly Glendixon. No, that never happened to me. But I did actually go. We were getting a tour. I was with my mum when she had to do some work, and we went to Los Angeles and we did a tour of the Warner Brothers back lot. And there was a giant pair of legs and butt just in the middle of the back lot. And mum was like, what's that for? And they're like, oh, it's some movie that's being shot. And so because of several sort of pictures of me and my mum with this giant butt. And it's from a scene that they were just shooting Hail Caesar on the back lot at Warner Brothers, like, I think at the same time. And that butt is in Hail Caesar. And that's my Hail Caesar story.
I was photographed with the butt from Hail Caesar. With
a giant butt. You know, it's supposed to be the bottom of a giant Roman statue from the movie.
Gotcha.
It just looked really randomly a butt in the middle of the street.
I mean, that's many degrees closer to any Coen Brothers film than I am, so colour me awed.
It was so great because Mum and I went to see the movie at the cinema and we had no idea. We still didn't know because they hadn't told us at the time what the film was. And it's just, oh look, it's our butt!
I recognise that butt!
That bum.
It's amazing. Well, I guess that's our chat about Ryan Murphy's Hollywood. It's on Netflix now. Go watch it. Tell us what you think.
Yeah, I really want to hear what people think about that. Because, you know, maybe we're totally wrong.
Maybe we are totally wrong.
Okay, mate.
All right.
I'll talk to you then.
Bye.
Bye.
Off Script, a weekly podcast about the things we love, is recorded and edited by me, Kylie Klein-Nixon, and senior entertainment reporter Emily Brooks. Drop us a line at offscriptnz@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at @nz_off or over at Instagram and Facebook at offscriptnz. Take it easy.